This program was brought to you by Eat On North. Eat On North is a casual restaurant where honest, uncomplicated food is served without pretension. Find Eat On North at hotelonnorth.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte, and when I'm not on the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. I am out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, restaurateurs, big brand startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Today, we'll have live in studio the award-winning Philly restaurateur Ellen Yin behind Fork. It's been beloved for nearly 20 years. High Street on Market, and now she's about to open High Street on Hudson, the group's first non-Philly foray. We'll get a preview of the much-anticipated opening, get to know Ellen, the rebellious Asian kid, find out how she's made it for two decades. Before that, by the way, she also went to business school and worked in the medical industry. Whoa. And catch up on how business partner and chef Eli Culp, post tragic injuries in the Amtrak crash over the summer, how he's faring, and also how you can help. So with that, I'd love to introduce people we like. You're such a happy bear. It's nice to see you again.
Good to see you too.
Yeah. Wow. So it's been quite the year.
It has been a crazy year. Crazy.
So what's the latest on when we might open? Despite all of the holdups with every restaurant opening.
What's with everybody in New York wanting to know the exact date?
It's like asking about the weather. It's pretty boring. Yeah, actually, it's the worst question ever, I have to admit.
Because the minute I can open, I'm going to open. we will open as soon as we possibly can, but we're hoping by early December.
Has New York been kind to you in terms of all the hurdles? You know, not of course the people. We're so excited to have you here, but yeah.
Oh my God, New York has been fabulous.
Really.
Well, I love New York City. I've always loved New York. In terms of the restaurant development process, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that are a lot easier, and there's a lot of things that are more difficult. But all things considered, I feel like we're doing a pretty good job.
So we have two Asian women here in the studio. And I grew up in a suburb of Southern California, mm-hmm. that had all Asians. I mean, like, there was barely a white person in sight, like 2.5 white people in my class of 170 something, you know, at my high school. Mm-hmm. And then you're like the white, the Asian kid who grew up in a white suburban New Jersey town.
Exactly. The exact opposite. I'm actually from Rumson, New Jersey, which is in Monmouth County. About an hour by train, or if you take the, you can take the ferry to Manhattan.
So I know that when I was growing up, I just felt like I felt the need to always be following the rules, because that's what, like, they tell little Asian girls. But you were kind of like, you just were rebellious, actually.
I always had to do everything different than everybody else.
Really?
I think when I got into high school, you know, of course, my loving parents were probably really disappointed about this, but I just couldn't wait to get out of the house. And that's how I ended up working in a restaurant and loving it and loving every minute of it. I worked in a little French restaurant in Rumson called The Fromagerie, which is owned by David Burke now.
Mm-hmm. And the restaurant has a bit of, you know, kind of unusual acclaim for the fact that, you know, it's not in a major city, right?
Yes. You know, Rumson is a tiny little dot right by Sandy Hook and Red Bank are the two probably most notable towns around it.
And so tell me more about the fromagerie like?
So the fromagerie always drew people from all over New Jersey. It was featured in the New York Times and Jacques Pepin and...
Alice Waters?
No, Julia Child.
Julia Child, okay.
Have been there before.
Wrong legend.
And the people who owned it, the Peters, always treated me really well. But I remember still to this day when I walked into the place and, you know, I was so intimidated by all the china, the glassware. I'm a little bit on the... you know, klutzy side, so to speak. It was a place that I always think back fondly about and taught me pretty much everything I know about the restaurant industry.
So one day after school, you just like walked in and...
I walked in and applied for a job as a bus girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they hired me. I didn't have any experience, you know, at that time. I don't even want to say what year it was, but but... You know, service was a lot different, and there was a lot of tray service and more...
hand-eye coordination.
Hand-eye coordination, right, exactly. It wasn't two plates only, like we have at Fork.
Have you, like, dropped a bunch of stuff all the time before? Like, what, as a, do you have, like, an experience as a teenager?
I think they might have nicknamed me Crash.
Really? Wow. So what was it about restaurants that, like, really tickled you?
I think I always... First of all, my mother was an amazing cook, and we always had, you know, lots
Ooh.
Of family parties.
Okay, what did she cook?
She's from Shanghai, and so, you know, she cooked primarily Chinese food, but... and so anything that was... out of the ordinary beyond that was something we wanted. I mean, we always wanted to go out and eat McDonald's.
Yeah, I feel you. I love
French fries.
Frozen food. Frozen food was the shit.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Isn't that ironic? She would make, for example, over Thanksgiving, she would take a chicken and she would completely debone it and then make sticky rice and mix all the chicken parts into it and then stuff it all back in and retruss it and roast it. And that was, you know, kind of one of her signature holiday dishes.
Oh, man, really Chinese good. Sticky rice inside of chicken. Okay, so she's like, she's good.
She was hardcore, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we had a lot of family gatherings at our house. And, you know, I always liked having people over. And I think I love the service component from day one. I always love, you know, making people happy. And so working in... a little French restaurant and seeing people immediately respond to, you know, service and the food was always really rewarding.
Would you help your mom out in the kitchen and just setting the table and all that jazz?
Like always.
Okay.
Dumpling making, everything.
You know what's really kind of so strange about my childhood is my mom was so bent on me getting those perfect grades, playing piano,
me
being
too.
Good at mathematics. So that
me too.
I was like banned from the kitchen. She was like, go study.
Yeah, even to this day, my mother's greatest secrets she probably shared with my youngest brother before she would share them with me. But that was the pressure was always, you know, you have to get good grades in school. And I remember graduating from high school and my father was just like, well, you were number three, but you would have been number two if you didn't have that job.
Oh, my gosh. I know. That's hilarious. Yeah. It's like, oh, there's a 96. Why didn't you get a 99? Why didn't you get 101? Was there extra credit available on that exam? So, I mean, did you kind of know, like, as a kid that you were kind of a bit of an, you know, oddball? I mean, I think you have to be an oddball to become a restaurateur.
A little bit. You know, I remember my father always saying, whatever I say, you want to do the opposite. So if it's springtime, you want to wear cold weather clothes. If it's summertime, you're cold. There's something wrong with you. Ugh. And, you know, that kind of, I guess, was our relationship. And the classes that I liked the most, art class, I would kind of hide out in the art lab in high school.
Okay. I also loved art.
Yeah.
I loved art. I made felt. And
That's
I made a
impressive.
Quilt, and it was all 3D art, and I also love to draw and all that jazz.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time, you know, there was a woman in my town, an artist, and instead of going to, you know, summer camp, we would go to her house, and you know, and draw and paint and hang out with her. She was amazing.
That's handy, having an artist in your town. So your dad, what did he do?
He was an engineer for Bell Labs.
Okay. So
that explains all the math.
And then your siblings, what are they doing now?
I don't even know what they do. They're all engineers.
Okay.
But my dad's dream was for me to work at Bell Labs. And I was just like, Dad, I suck at it. I'm not good at physics. It's not going to happen. And he's just like, well, they have other departments at Bell Labs. And I'm like, I don't think so.
The mailroom, for instance.
Right.
Yeah.
But when I went to college, I ended up working in a French restaurant in Philadelphia called Restaurant La Terrasse. And I love that even more. That kind of stopped me from going home and working at this other restaurant and convinced me to stay in Philadelphia. And I loved working there as well. And it was something that made me feel like I could keep going through college because I was constantly having these, you know, should I be here or not? Mm. Should I just go open a restaurant or not? And then I realized after taking a class on entrepreneurship that I have no idea how to do anything. And, you know, I wouldn't be able to succeed if I didn't have any financial backing. And I knew my parents were not going to give any support in that direction.
Of course. So, okay. So then where did you go to school and what was your specialization or major?
I went to University of Pennsylvania, and my undergraduate degree was in management, and specifically entrepreneurship. And I graduated from there realizing that I wasn't going to be able to open a restaurant, so I took a job in an advertising agency.
Yay. So, what were you doing in advertising?
What was I doing in advertising? Well, I realized, you know, for whatever an advertising agency does. At that time, I was working for a small little agency that did fashion, retail, and restaurants. And the owner of the agency is still a great friend and has influenced me dramatically, but I didn't know it at the time. And basically, I was in business development. Mm-hmm. And I would go through the magazines and look for people who could potentially use their services, call them up. And if I was lucky and I got a meeting, I was allowed to participate in the entire process from, you know, getting to know the client, what they wanted, putting together a proposal, coming up with a campaign, seeing their ads. And, you know, that was when people had print ads.
So you actually opened deals that closed and then you got to do the projects.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then, by the way, you're one of the most book nerdiest restaurateurs I've ever met.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I'll probably come up with some other good examples.
Because you also went to business school as well.
I did. I went. So after I realized that I couldn't succeed in that career, I got a job working in a nonprofit agency raising money. And
an important skill that you now use as a restaurateur.
Yeah, event planning and raising money and working with a lot of different types of people and committees and things like that. And I loved it for the first year, and then I realized I had to repeat. And that's something that probably has something to do with why I like owning a restaurant, because it's never the same.
Okay.
And I don't like to do the same thing over and over again. I'm
right.
One of those people. And
at a nonprofit, you're raising money just a little more, but every year it's the same really hard work in that way.
It was for me doing events, you know,
events,
once you do it one time or two times.
Yep.
Boring.
Yep. Absolutely.
So I decided to go to grad school, and I was a candy striper in high school. I didn't like that, but I ended up deciding to get a degree in healthcare administration, and again,
to help people.
But meanwhile, all the same time, thinking maybe I should be an architect, maybe I should just open a restaurant.
What were all your friends doing? You know,
I have a lot of artist friends, so you know, a lot of people doing their own businesses, you know, I didn't fit in with them either because I was always working.
Right. Okay. Okay. So great. You're going into medical administration.
And then I realized it was a big company, you know, and I worked for a huge consulting firm for about 6 to 9 months. And I realized, wow, I don't belong here. But I still liked what I was doing. And I ended up leaving with a group of people who went to form an insurance company in Long Island. And they were creating a company from scratch. And it was one of those things where they relied on me to do a lot of things, a lot of different things.
At the age of what, like 29?
29 or 30.
So what exactly were you doing? Just like running hospitals? Making things happen?
No, they were raising money, mm-hmm. and I was filling out all their certificate of authority to become an insurance company and creating the business plan and with them, of course, under their guidance.
That is so technical.
Writing quality assurance plans.
Are we so lucky to get to work in food and drink?
If it wasn't that I didn't know anything about it and I was just absorbing constantly what this business was, I probably would have hated it a lot more. But I was really excited by all the things that were getting done and the formation of the company. Mm-hmm. And those guys ended up being, some of my original investors in Fork.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So it comes full circle.
So Fork is owned by myself and my graduate business partner, Roberto Sella, mm-hmm. who loved wine, and by a handful of, my colleagues from this insurance company, and now Chef Eli Culp.
So at what point then, P.S. actually, when you were zigging and zagging and just doing all sorts of really completely colorful jobs, were you like, it's fine, I'm learning from each thing? Were you at peace with the fact that you were doing all sorts of different things, or were you like, what is it that I'm meant to do in life? And it was like scary at times.
Yeah, I was tormented constantly.
Okay, because I was
depressed,
really tormented.
And yeah. You know,
I almost went to business school. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to say don't do it. But, it helped me a lot to be there, but a lot of self-reflection and, why am I not happy doing this?
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Why do I have this itch constantly to be doing something that is really difficult? And, but loving, I still love to throw dinner parties, still love to entertain, still love to do all that stuff. Found people that I had common interests with, but I kept feeling like I don't feel fulfilled by work. I don't dislike it, but I don't feel fulfilled.
For me, what was really hard is that I knew that I was a hard worker, and I am a hard worker. I mean, just in school, like, I got perfect grades. I'm a really typical, boring Asian. And then I'm like, okay, but how come if I love to work hard, how come in, like, an office environment, I don't like, I dread it. It was just like, I was never a good fit.
It was awful. I was always like, and this was pre-internet, so, it wasn't like you could be in your office hiding and, checking out websites and everything. But I always was bored out of my mind and looking for some other way to get it done so that I wouldn't have to be behind the desk. But I think the consulting thing worked for me because I didn't have to be at the office. A lot of times I could work from home.
Mm-hmm.
It was different every single day. I did different clients and, it was challenging.
Do you think some of the torment was self-inflicted because, like, as a bad Asian, like, kind of thing? Does it come from that, or, I don't want to call it insecurity, that's such a bad word, but where did that need to figure it out, come from?
Just because I just wasn't happy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then how did all of a sudden you'd say, hey, I'm going to leave this hospital stuff and I'm going to go pursue my dream thing?
So it just kept recurring for me. Every time I would have a job change or a career change, I was just like, maybe I should open the restaurant. Maybe I should open a restaurant. And I finally saved enough money that I could actually put in a substantial amount of my own savings in, because I knew that it wasn't going to come from my family. And, you know, I think I picked up Food and Wine magazine, and I was looking at all the restaurant owners, and they were all in their, you know, 30s. And I was just like, if I don't do this soon, I'm not going to have the opportunity. And I don't want to ever look back and say I should have. So I decided I'm going to go for it. And I knew that my business partner, Roberto, wanted to also own a restaurant. And, you know, he's a huge, tremendous friend and supporter. And so, you know, I was always looking for places and dreaming of places and coffee shops and envisioning empty storefronts into restaurant spaces. And I saw a space on Market Street that was vacant, and it said restaurant for lease. And I'm like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to find out about it. Mm-hmm. And I went in and I saw it. The ceilings were huge. It was wide, which is unusual in Philadelphia. You know, I started looking into Market Street, and everybody was saying the convention center is going to connect with the waterfront down Market Street, and Market Street's going to have this revitalization. And I loved Old City because Old City had galleries and small independent businesses, and it was kind of like off the beaten path, and it felt like downtown to me. Mm-hmm. And so I just investigated the space, and, you know, I thought to myself, I'm going to put together a business plan and see what happens. And that, coupled with the Food and Wine magazine of all these young people, and the fact that I thought I could do it for $100,000.
Okay, awesome.
$100,000 of our money. And
yeah, how did you piece that together?
So, you know, my money, Roberto's money, and then a bunch of our colleagues and friends. And then I just started shopping it to banks and had my, you know, I was so moody. Every day it was up and down.
And because it was really hard.
It was really hard. I had my, the door slammed in my face so many times because they're like, well, you don't have any experience. I'm like, but I'm a Wharton MBA. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You never ran a restaurant. And I'm like, but I have experience between, working in high school. I've done it, done every job.
And you're like, I also did stuff in medical field, okay? Totally relevant.
Finally, I went and I met with then Mayor Ed Rendell's business action team. Somebody said, oh, you should talk to them because they might be able to help with financing. And I met with them, and they said, oh, you should talk to TD Bank, or the then TD Bank. Mm-hmm. And I met with them, and they ended up financing the remainder because they liked the business plan, and they felt like we were, you know, the type of people who were going to pay the money back, which is unusual. I mean, this is like 1996, so the economy was a lot different than it is today.
Huh. After this quick commercial break, we will return with restaurateur Ellen Yin here live in the studio at Heritage Radio Network from Philly, and we're going to talk the new high street on Hudson, catch up on Chef Eli Culp's progress, and more. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Brian Alberg, and I'm the executive chef at Eat On North in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts. Eat On North in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts is a casual restaurant where good, honest, uncomplicated food is served to our guests. Our restaurant is part of the hotel called Hotel On North, the newly opened boutique hotel in downtown Pittsfield. We source local ingredients from our neighboring farms and offer an all-day dining menu of flavorful American cuisine for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and on weekends we serve brunch. Our oyster bar serves up delicious shellfish and oyster samplers until 11 p.m. Check out our menu at eatonnorth.com and follow us on Instagram.
Hey Hey, this is Michael Harlan Turkel from the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. You know, every Tuesday at 3 p.m., I stop in the studio, walk to the far side, sit in my favorite blue chair. If you ever stop by Roberta's, look through the window and you can see that chair itself. You know, and I've been sitting here for 5+ years, 250 episodes, have met some of the best people in the food world, such great culinary minds. And recently we just relaunched our website, added a whole bunch of shows, but we still need you, our listeners, our friends, our fans, even guests themselves, to help us out. We're a 501c3, a nonprofit, and we're not really doing this for the money. We're doing this for the love, for the greater good of the food world as a whole. So get on heritageradionetwork.org, click that little pounding heart in the top right corner, and, you know, give what you can, or just keep on listening. We'd love to have you.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue on Heritage Radio Network. If you love what you hear, do connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm at Leiti Sue, that's L-E-I-T-I-H-S-U. We're at Heritage_radio, and you can hashtag WOM Show, that's short for Word of Mouth Show, WOMSHOW. And you can also hit subscribe and listen to the show anytime, anywhere, through iTunes or Stitcher. And we have here in the studio Ellen Yin, restaurateur behind the very beloved Fork in Philadelphia, also High Street on Market, soon to open High Street on Hudson here in New York. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
So, give us a little taste of what's happening, what we can expect from the new High Street, and maybe how it's different from the Philly
one. We're really excited to open very soon, we hope, in a few weeks.
No pressure.
High Street on Hudson, it's on Hudson Street. High Street on Market was inspired, the name was inspired by our location on Market Street, which in the old colonial times was High Street, and that's how we came up with the name. So High Street is a morning through evening concept, and each component is very thought out by our chef team. The same amount of effort that it takes to make any plate at dinner time is the equivalent of what we spend to come up with dishes at breakfast time and lunch time. The theme of breakfast through lunch is our bread program, which we use to make toast, bread, sandwiches. And an amazing
shared love of carbohydrates.
Right. and of course, our pastry chef, Sam Kincaid, has come up with a really inventive pastry program. Mm. We have these really delicious breakfast sandwiches, the Hickory Town, which has Lancaster bologna and cheese and pastrami and hash. We have a sandwich called the Forager, which is a vegetarian sandwich, and we're going to be bringing a new sandwich to New York on a sage black pepper biscuit with some malt breakfast sausage.
Oh, yeah.
And aged cheddar.
Okay, that sounds delicious. It's been a nutty year, but I want to rewind even back to kind of another time in your 20-ish year tenure as a restaurateur. Stuff was really, really hard when you expanded to the space next door to Fork.
Yeah. So Old City is kind of a neighborhood of lots of dry goods stores. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I love about Old City is it's very integrated. So our building is a 5-story building. Next door was a store called the Pants Corner, which had, you know, if you can believe it, the historic designation is about the signage, which is painted on to the building in, or was until it burned down, painted black, or I'm sorry, red, white, and blue in, you know, very 70s signage. And I love the eclectic neighborhood. We had a dollar store next to us, and it closed. And
What would the neighborhood be equivalent to in New York? Just because I actually don't know Philly very well.
It's unique because Market Street is kind of the main business corridor.
Yeah.
And then north of it is like a very Soho-ish, warehousey,
art gallery-ish neighborhood. And south of it is much more residential. And then we're right in this heart of the historic district. Much like our new location in New York, which is right near the Whitney and the High Line, mm-hmm. it's, you know, has a lot of tourism, but also has a lot of residential people living in the neighborhood. And
we could all use more breakfast, because breakfast is a new black.
Breakfast is a new black, but lunch is pretty awesome. And dinner, we're really excited about the dinner program.
So when you expanded to the place next door, it was pretty tough for a number of years.
Well, I'm not sure I should say it, but so when we opened Fork Etc. next door to Fork, it was a prepared foods bakery, sandwich shop, cafe. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that rats could be so big.
Why rats?
Well, you know, we were on the main corridor of Philadelphia, and so construction-wise, we were expected to use union labor.
Mm-hmm.
So that blew the budget into a realm that I wasn't expecting, and
absolutely.
So it was very difficult to just get back into the gear. And when we opened, there was a dumpster in front of the restaurant, and then the economy started tanking, and it was difficult, but we got out of it and, you know, turned Fork Etc. after a long, almost, it opened in 2004 and we closed it in 2013. So how many years is that?
I'm not a math Asian, so...
Six plus three is nine, almost 10-year run. We decided to rebrand it. When Eli joined me in 2012, he was really excited by the space because, our kitchens are joined and it could be its own restaurant if we chose it to be. And that's what we decided was to continue the concept of breakfast and lunch as a destination sandwich shop and bakery, and to make dinner a
totally different
concept.
Are there kind of takeaway lessons from maybe how you might have done that differently if you were to do that again?
Maybe I wouldn't have called it Fork Etc. because, you know, people always love something new. And I thought, oh, well, if it's branded with the Fork brand, it'll be easier to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big space. And, some of the concepts were a little bit before its time. Like we wanted to do canning. I have 1,000 glass jars if anybody out there wants mason jars. The idea was to sell our Fork products in the store. And then we also had...
So you're doing like a Justa like 10 years ago or something. Yeah.
And we had this big bistro table in the middle of the room that every Wednesday night was a four-course tasting mm-hmm. for $45, and people didn't know what they were going to get until 12 o'clock that day, and there were no reservations. You would just show up.
That's so edgy at the time.
It was edgy at the time. It was edgy at the time. But then, it was not consistent because you didn't know who was coming, and
right.
It was difficult.
So what are you excited about in the Philly restaurant world right now? What's
in the
yummy?
Philadelphia restaurant world?
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's a lot going on.
I have to make a trip, yeah.
You do,
yeah.
Because, Philadelphia is, the restaurant industry has just boomed over the past several years. Lots of very talented chefs have come to Philadelphia, including Eli and Peter Serpico, Greg Vernick, but lots of homegrown talent that is also very good. And also the ethnic food scene is really good. You don't have to wait until 11 o'clock to get a reservation. You don't have to wait 3 weeks to get a reservation at 9:30 on any night of the week. It's affordable. Other than the beverage programs, it's a great city to get to know. It's walkable. It's bikeable.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of living is great.
So best bite in this last year that's not from one of your own many, many places.
Best bite Well, you know, I love Vietnamese food.
So do I.
I'm in love with number 55 at Pho Saigon. I could eat that every single night. It's just vermicelli rice noodles with shredded pork skin and crispy spring roll. And I put a scoop of chili powder paste on there, and
yum.
I'm so happy.
We're all little Asian kids at the end of the day.
Right, exactly.
Just going for that umami, that pork, and those carbohydrates. How did you meet Eli?
So in summer of 2012, my chef Terrence Fury, who extremely talented guy, his dad was my sixth grade teacher. I never believed that he was going to leave Fork, but he decided that he was going to pursue his own project. And so I was looking for somebody, and I just started reaching out to every person I knew in the restaurant community in the country, asking them if they knew anybody who wanted to be a chef of Fork in Philadelphia.
We also did some Craigslisting, right?
Over Craigslist.
You can find everything on Craigslist these days.
You know, everything. Mm-hmm. And I was fortunate enough, about a month after Terrence had given me notice, to be introduced to Eli. And I joke because I say, oh, I couldn't tell whether I was interviewing Eli or Eli was interviewing me. But after the interview, I was thinking to myself, I really like that. Because, you know, it can't just be only about one person's opinion about everything. It's got to be a collaboration. And I really interviewed a lot of chefs who were asking me, well, what do I want? And I was thinking to myself, I want ideas from other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
to reinvigorate.
I really liked that about Eli. And at that point, I decided I'm going to change Fork in some major way. I don't know what yet, but I need somebody who's going to help create that new format and recreate this restaurant. Not that there was anything wrong with it. It could have just kept going, but at some point, you know, all good things come to an end.
Yeah, it's like to be in business for 2 decades, you have to keep on reinventing. Mm-hmm. And letting people shine. Where this summer, the accident, where were you when you found out?
I was actually sitting outside of High Street having dinner with a friend, and Eli's wife Marisa called me and said, Eli's on this train that just derailed. And I was just like, how do you know? And she was just like, I just know it, because he's not answering his phone. And he had just left my office, and I was just like, no, it's impossible. He just left my office like 15 minutes ago. He couldn't have made that train. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, remain calm. Let's just figure out what to do. And I went on the internet, and I was just like, holy smokes. I can't believe this is like a catastrophe. I mean, it looked like the pictures already had started to be posted online. And I looked on the internet, and they said people were being brought to several hospitals. And mm-hmm. so I just started dialing the hospitals. Mm-hmm. And the first one I called said that they did have a patient by that name. And I was just like, is he okay? And they're like, he's stable. And I was just like, oh my God. I'm like, we have to go there right away.
Yeah. So then you took off with...
So I, Wayne, my boyfriend, and I got in a rental car and drove to Tarsdale Hospital. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't let us in to see him, and
there was one point where you had a gut feeling about things.
I did have a gut feeling about things, because I'm like, the fact that they won't let us see him can't be good. Mm-hmm. And then somebody let us in, and Eli didn't want to see us, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm like, this is awful. And so we waited for Eli's wife to come, and kind of the rest is history.
Was he wasn't conscious when you guys came got there or could speak to you?
No, he didn't want to speak to us.
Okay.
Which, you know, I mean, I don't know what his situation was at that particular time, mm-hmm. but...
When he was able to and wanted to speak with you, what was, you know, what was the, what's the first thing that you guys wanted to each other to know?
Well, you know, Eli, if you're listening, you know, I
Hi,
think...
Hi, Eli. I'm really looking forward to meeting him, by the way.
He's an amazing person. So charismatic, so strong. And that's the thing is, you know, Eli is always so strong and positive and, you know, keep going. And, you know, what choice do we have but to keep going? So no matter what, you can't give up.
So, you know, so he's still very much at the helm leading the team and
Thing he did say to me.
Okay.
I think after he got off, you know, whatever painkillers told me that he needed his phone and he needed to get his computer back. So, you know, Eli is, he's just, again, an amazing person and so talented. And, you know, I know that he's going to figure out a way.
Yeah, to continue leading. It's been really interesting to hear from you how he's remained involved in all aspects of the business, because it kind of says something about the role that chefs play today. Like, they play so many different roles. They don't mm-hmm. have to be the one chopping the carrots, you know?
Right. Well, we operate 4 restaurants, so, you know, it's not possible for Eli to cook every single dish in the restaurant, and we have an amazing team backing us up at all our locations. We're really excited about every single one of those teams, and including New York. We have Taylor Naples, our new chef de cuisine, who's going to be working with our culinary director, John Nodler, from High Street Hospitality Group. Sam Kincaid, our pastry chef, who won Food & Wine Best New Pastry Chef, and Alex Bois, who was a James Beard finalist for Rising Star.
So, by the way, I just whose idea was it to come up to do the big cardboard life size cutout of Eli? Because I see it everywhere, and I love it.
Like me,
you did that.
Yeah,
I feel like I already know him
because I just feel like his energy has to be with us.
It's just really funny. I think it's you get that printed on the internet or something.
I took it to our neighbor who makes stuff.
Awesome.
Eli got a kick out of it when I brought it to for our first fundraiser in July. I gave him a tour of the room because we really transformed our entire space into a really magical place for this fundraiser. And I was just like, Eli, you got to check this out. It's amazing. We put up a tent. We made everybody walk through the restaurant into the kitchen to say hi to our chefs, kind of like James Beard, you know, ish.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they walked into our backyard, which normally is like a burned out, you know, there was a fire there 14 years ago. And next door, there was a fire a year and a half ago. And we got all our neighbors to agree to allow us to flatten the lot, empty it out, and construct a tent over it.
Amazing.
We got everything donated. The event raised $139,000, I think, for mm-hmm. Eli's medical expenses. But it was really fascinating. And I was just like, you got to check it out. And then when I got to the Eli Culp stand-up, he just laughed hysterically. It was great. I miss that about him.
I thought it was just at the Roots of American Food event. I was like, God, he's looking at us. he's watching me. So you have let's actually get the focus back on you. You've got a boyfriend of many, many years. What does he do?
He is jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades.
He does everything from, he was an IT yeah. person, Wayne. Wayne is amazing.
That's a good name.
He also develops websites on the side, but 5 years ago, my mom had a major stroke. And so since then, he's been very involved. And even before then, he was really involved support-wise.
you know, friend-wise, and then now he builds everything in the restaurant, fixes everything in the restaurant, and the poor guy, people are like, oh, the maintenance man, and I'm like, you mean Wayne? he really, you know, kills himself for Fork and High Street, and he made the door of High Street, and he's making with our beloved friend Danny, he's making the window factory windows for High Street on Hudson.
Wow. Behind every great woman, there is a great man.
Not to mention that he builds the website and
that is incredible.
Does all the email management for our company and you know, listens to everybody.
Okay, besides that,
helps all our staff move.
Besides that, I need to find myself a Wayne. Last question for you before we get into how we can help the Eli cause is what advice do you have? What makes you guys work so well together for so many years? You and
we don't
Wayne.
Live together.
That is incredible. I love that.
Well, you know, I mean, at this point, it's not by choice, but I'm just kidding, of course. I think it's that, you know, we have a great life. We can travel together and, you know, try not to have arguments about work. but Wayne is fun and he's got a great sense of humor, and that's what probably keeps him going. Very patient. He's a very patient person.
You inspire me. So how can we help the Eli cause? Where can we go to donate/?
Well, Eli has a GoFundMe site that is under the Culp Family Medical Fund. Mm-hmm. And everybody is welcome to go online and make donations through that, GoFundMe.com. Although I'm not sure what the exact GoFundMe.com / Eli Culp.
And you guys, the new High Street is on Twitter at High Street, High STNYC.
Yes.
Are you on Twitter?
We are on Twitter.
No, but you personally?
Am I on Twitter?
No.
I'm behind the scenes on Twitter.
Okay, cool. So stay in touch with Ellen and Eli and the whole team's. Congrats on the almost opening. Thank you, Ellen, for joining me today. We're live 2 p.m. Eastern Wednesdays on Word of Mouth on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you so much for our generous sponsors for making nonprofit food radio possible. And also thank you to the awesome Jack Inslee, sound engineering in the studio today. I'm your host, Leyte. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.